Billings, Montana, and that's where I call home whenever I'm home, which is not a lot, because I get to spend a lot of my time walking around and driving around and doing fun stuff like this. So, a little about me. I am an elder and a member of the Yellowstone Conference. I served an amazing church in Billings called Evangelical United Methodist, and led them in a turnaround. When I got there, everyone kept telling me, Jeremy, if the church dies while you're here, no one will blame you. Which is what you want to hear from your district superintendents and your mentors and everybody else when you go to a church. But they were lovely people, and I had a fantastic 4 years with them. We did some great work together, really digging back into our community, really rebuilding relationships with folks in our community, and rebuilding a congregation around some really strong missional principles. And after I had done that, Bishop Elaine called and asked me if I'd be interested in taking on this role. And I thought, well, that sounds like fun. But what I didn't count on was how much I missed the local church, because my heart just belongs to the local church. I got into ministry because I believe in the local church's ability to bring good and life and grace into the world, and that's what God wants our churches to do. So I hold on to my love for the local church while I navigate this thing we call the conference. And it just gives me life to come and be with you all. Before I was a pastor, I actually spent a number of years as a software engineer. My undergraduate degree is in computer science. And I do think it's good and wonderful every once in a while to have some engineers around. So are there any engineering type people in the room? Kind of curious. I know you got School of Mines here, right? I mean,
yeah, it's Golden.
Yeah, and Golden. And then what's here is Seaboulder. Okay, right. So... you know, and my wife would tell you the joke in our house is I got bored of making money and decided to go into the ministry and be poor. which isn't quite how it turned out, because at the same time my wife went back to school and she's now a nurse practitioner. So I figured for the first, 15 years we were married, I took care of her, and now she's making sure our kids get to go to college. But it's just been a thrill, and we've just learned so much over these last several years about the church and about the world we live in now. And of course, you all are just quite frankly at ground zero for this cultural shift that is just really sweeping the country. And it's a shift away from, and we all know this, it's a shift kind of away from church and away from religion in general, and more people are coming up and growing up these days never having experienced church, and that's just a different kind of thing to deal with than we're used to dealing with. So many people that you will encounter in the world today actually don't really have anything against church. They just don't know anything about it, right? I mean, they're indifferent to what we do. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and what we're going to talk a lot about, too, is just what we've learned through some of our new church starts. So new church starts really are the research and development arm of the church, right? I mean, if you're doing a new church start, you're starting with a blank sheet of paper, and your goal is to reach people who are not church people. I work with 9 new church start projects in our area right now, and every single one of them, we say the same thing in the beginning. If this is about just taking people from other churches and moving it to your new church, then I'm not interested. That's not what we're after. We want to find and we want to reach new people that we're not currently reaching with the good news. So the new church development world really is our R&D department, because they're the ones out there on the front lines trying to figure out how do you connect a message of faith, how do you connect a message of grace with those who don't know anything about us. And are indifferent to what we do. So a lot of what I want to share with you this morning are things that we've learned from there that I recognize as a pastor who spent my life in the existing church are really helpful and applicable to us. So I call this Do Not Be Afraid, because I think that's the first thing we have to learn is not to be afraid. The world is not scary. It's actually full of rather nice people. And again, those folks that you who encounter who aren't church people and don't know about us and don't really seem to care much about what we do, they're not actually really hostile, they're indifferent, right? So, and indifference is different, right? But we shouldn't be afraid of indifferent people. All right, so one of the things that's the greatest gift that I have in my life is, there's two groups of people we talk about a lot today. We talk about the nuns, you know, not like Catholic nuns, but the N-O-N-E-S's, right? Those are the ones who, when fill out surveys, they check the box, none of the above, right? Like, you know, for religious preferences, Christian, Jewish, Hindu, Muslim, whatever, there's like nothing. I claim nothing. And that's a pretty big, that is actually the fastest growing religious segment in the United States are the nuns. In this part of the world, they make up at least 30% of the population. In Colorado in general, they make up at least 30% of the population. I'm guessing in this area, it's even more. And again, these are folks that have never, they were raised by people who didn't go to church. They themselves have never been to church. They don't know who Peter is. They don't know who Paul is. They don't know who Noah is. They don't know who Moses is. They just don't know anything. They've never experienced this. They don't know anything about us. And I know these folks really well because I married one. My wife and I, met in a period of my life when I was not particularly involved in church. And she was raised by parents who were former Catholics, who left the Catholic Church behind when they turned about 13 and could make that choice for themselves, and never looked back. The second time my wife was ever in a local church was on the day we got married, and the first time was the day before when we had the rehearsal. That's it. And so for the first couple of years that we were married, that worked out. I actually grew up in the church in Miles City, Montana, on the eastern kind of eastern plains of Montana. And after college and after a couple of years in my career, I was looking for something, and I decided that I was going to go back and try church. And I remember thinking, I think I was a Methodist before. I'm pretty sure it was Methodist church camp I went to. So my wife said, oh, you know, there's a Methodist church across the street from where she was going to college in Albuquerque at the time. And she's like, you should check it out. And I'm like, great. And then she's like, you should do that because then I can sleep in. And you will have something to do. And for years, that's what we did. Even as I got more and more involved in the life of the church, started to volunteer with the youth group and do all this stuff. My wife was more than happy to have me do it. She enjoyed the fact that it was important to me, but never really made the leap as this is something that was interesting to her. And it actually wasn't until our son was born, and I had been mostly attending a contemporary worship service at this church. It's much like the one that you all do here. They threw us a baby shower. And so my wife came to the baby shower, and they gave us some gifts and everything. And the following Sunday, she's like, well, I suppose I should, you know, go to church and say thank you to everybody. I'm like, that'd be great. And then she came, and she said thank you to everybody, and she realized how many of the people in the room that she knew, and shook hands. And then about 2 days later, our son was born. So then the following Sunday, she's like, well, I guess we have to take the baby and show them off at church. And I'm like, yes, we gotta do that. And she's been at church with me every day, every Sunday since. She was actually baptized while I was in my first semester of seminary, when the pastor I was interning with found out she had not been baptized. And the great thing about having her around is she knows when we're just going through the motions. She has no tolerance for things that are not valuable to her. They're not valuable experiences, right? And so I get asked this question all the time: what kind of worship experience, what kind of worship style should we have in order, you know, to bring in young people? And my answer is always the same: you should have good worship, right? You should have worship that's meaningful. You should have worship that calls people to a better place. You should have worship that allows people to encounter the Holy Spirit, right? And it doesn't really matter what kind of matters, but what you do. The most important thing is that's what you're attempting to do with that time, right? Because that's what people are looking for. People are still looking for value and meaning and purpose in their lives. And what the church has sort of gotten out of is recognizing that that's what we do. It's not only part of what we do, it's the core of what we do, right? We help people make sense of the universe. We help people understand the value of their lives and the value of their life in relationship with their relationship with God. We help them find out their God-given purpose. We talk a lot in the church about call. Unfortunately, we talk about call in terms of like pastors, you know, like me. But the truth is, the church has always known that every one of us has a call in our life. Every one of us has a purpose to our lives that God has given us. And it should be something about loving God and loving neighbor, right? Because that's what we do here. So, so one of the things that we've learned both through, I've just personally learned through my wife, and we've learned through our new church starts, is that when we're trying to reach folks who don't know anything about church and don't are indifferent to what we do, what they really want to know is, what's the value of being there? What's the value of being part of it? And not really in a selfish way, and not necessarily in a self-serving way, but because our world is so full of shallowness, right? We have lots of shallow experiences. Facebook is nothing but a continual shallow experience with a lot of people. And I use Facebook every day, and I love Facebook, and I Facebooked a selfie of me in front of your church this morning. You know, I mean, I love doing stuff like that. But I also recognize that when things are going deeply wrong in my life, I don't turn to Facebook. Right? I turn to my relationships with the friends and the people that I know. And I might know them on Facebook, too. But that's what folks are looking for. So part of one of the challenges is, what we've learned through New Church Starts is, it's not even so much about changing what we do, though oftentimes there are things we need to change. It's about changing how we talk and understand what we do. So there was this great study done, this great project that came out of Harvard Divinity, called How We Gather. And what they did is they looked at all these different places around the, all these different organizations around the United States that are doing a good job reaching the same kind of people that we want to reach. And they found some interesting commonalities among them. One of the ones that they studied that most people have heard of is CrossFit. Who's heard of CrossFit? You know CrossFit is? Okay. So CrossFit is, it's not a gym, but it is a the place you go to exercise. But to say that's all it is not fair, because it's not like a gym where you just go and stand on a treadmill, right? I mean, CrossFit really celebrates itself and sells itself as a lifestyle. And it's really interesting to talk to people who are really into CrossFit, because they will talk a little bit about the exercise and a little bit about that, but they will spend more time talking about the community, the people they meet there, you know, the fact that when their father died, people from their CrossFit box, it's not called a gym, it's called a box, but people from their CrossFit box came and brought them food, that they really, through CrossFit, is where they find the group of people that they do life together with. And if you listen to the way that they talk, they will talk about CrossFit in the same way that most of us would talk about church. And so what these folks did is they went out and studied a bunch of different organizations that people talk about and interact with in that way. And they discovered a number of themes that came up in that in those systems or those groups that they talked about. And that they found common around most of them, and what people seem to be connecting to. And so they're listed here. They came up with these six themes. I had emailed handouts. Did those actually get with the slides and everything? Okay. Oops. All right. They're here. And some of these are all things we should probably recognize. They found that, you know, across all these ones, they found an incredible sense of community. You know, valuing and fostering deep relationships that center on service to others. You know, community, personal transformation. I mean, of course, so first of all, we're in the community business. We know that, right? Like, the church is not the building. It's the people, like we've been saying this for years. So, you know, I mean, obviously, community, we know we're in that business. Personal transformation, making conscious and dedicated efforts to develop one's bodies, mind, and spirit, right? I mean, we are all works in progress, and we know that. We have scriptures over and over and over again that tell us that, right? That, you know, and whether it's the potter and the clay or whatever analogy you want to use, we know that we are, you know, we're works in progress. We should, and we're called to, and we're strived. We're called to strive to make, to do what we can to improve ourselves, right? And oftentimes the church has focused in on, you know, the spirit side of things, the spiritual side of things. But what we can no longer ignore, and what we recognize really strongly today, is that, you know, the idea of mind, body, and spirit, they're very deeply interconnected, right? It is a sin to give a hungry person a Bible and not a sandwich. Like, I'm sorry. You know, but it is. Like, you know, if you're hungry or your family's hungry, it doesn't matter how good the news is, because the only good news is a sandwich, right? Like, you need to care about that. We're waking up to the, you know, all the issues around mental illness, especially, you know, mental illness as it resolves. You know, one of the places we see this a lot now is in our returning veterans with PTSD and moral injury, you know, and all those things that are going on with them. That this is something that we know, and it's hard to have a strong, active prayer and devotional life, you know, if you have, you know, body illnesses or mental illnesses or other things that you're struggling with, right? So these things are deeply interconnected. And as the church, we've always somewhat known this. We'll host AA, we'll host NA, we'll host these groups. But so many of the churches that are cutting through today are out integrating those practices and integrating what that is and recognizing that people are looking for a holistic view. I mean, that's sort of the age we're in now, right? We're looking at things not individually, we're not dicing things up anymore, but we're looking at things a lot more holistically. And so people may go to CrossFit, you know, looking for some body transformation. They want to lose a few pounds. It's, you know, first New Year's or whatever. But what they're also finding is they're finding communities of support that are helping them with loneliness. They're finding, you know, that they'll even talk about it in almost, you know, spiritual terms. You know, in many ways, like hospitals, you know, which should, you know, we know are in the business, you know, of, you know, the bodily health. But how many of our hospitals have chaplains, right? You know, and provide those spiritual services as well, because they know that that's important when people are going through experiences of diagnosis or whatever. When I was in seminary, I had some friends who were on the chaplaincy staff at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. And Nationwide Children's Hospital it's a secular hospital. It is not a, you know, Methodist, Presbyterian, whatever hospital. It's a secular hospital. But they had a very, very strong chaplaincy. And anytime a child came in to the ER, especially for any kind of trauma, a chaplain was assigned to that family. And you know, would stay with them. I mean, assuming they wanted them to, obviously. But they took that side of it well, because they recognized that they needed to care for both the family and the patient in a spiritual way while they were caring for their bodies, right? And so hospitals know this. And I think we need to know our side of that, which is to say, while we're trying to care for people's souls and spirits, we also have to recognize if they're struggling with, you know, chronic illness, or they're struggling, you know, with mental health issues, that we need to care about that too. So my other passion personally is I was diagnosed with diabetes about 15 years ago. I've lived with it this whole time. I actually wrote a book about it, about living with diabetes. And I've often marveled at how, you know, if 1 in 10 people, we know 1 in 10 people in the world today have diabetes, and how little voice the church is having for those folks. There's a lot of legitimate struggle that comes with having chronic illness. You know, especially things like that. So the church has a voice in there. Okay, I gotta move on. Social transformation, pursuing justice and beauty in the world through the creation of networks for good. Well, I mean, obviously, I mean, this is one, you know, we should be as a church pretty solid on. I mean, we've got things like UMCOR and things like that. You know, like, we recognize that we're in the mercy justice business, right? Like, that's an unassailable part of who we are as the church. You know, we're interested in making the world around us better. Now, we might talk about it in terms of building out the kingdom of God, you know, or something like that, and talk about how in the kingdom of God, you know, there is no Gentile, no Jew, there is no male or female, there is no preferably black or white, there's no gay, straight, right? Like, it's just people. And that our job is to make our communities look a little bit more like that, right? So we know we're in that business. Purpose finding, this is a big one. People are craving to make a difference. They're craving to know that their lives have purpose and meaning to them. And again, this goes back to this understanding of we need to recognize that it's not that I am called and pastors are called, it's that we're all called. We're all called to live out our part of the body of Christ. So, you know, we should have a big piece of this this work. But I don't think we do that. I think, I don't know anything about your church, so I'm just speaking in generalities. But in a lot of churches that I encounter, as long as people show up, put some money in the plate, and maybe serve on a committee, we're happy with them. But should we be? Is that enough? Like, is my purpose to put money in the plate and serve on a committee? Like, I hope that we have an understanding of God and God's desire in our lives that goes beyond just that. Creativity, you know, people, and that comes in different forms, but we have this innate need to create beautiful things, and whether it's beautiful music or art or I love to cook, whatever it is, we have this need to express ourselves and make ourselves known. And then finally, accountability. What's interesting about the places like CrossFit and all that kind of stuff is these are very, very accountable systems. If you're normally there on a Thursday and you skip a Thursday, you will probably get a phone call. Not because they're rigid about it. You'll get a phone call because you were missed, right? Like somebody knew you well enough, and valued you being there enough. And valued you continuing to make progress on your goals enough that that when you're not there, you are missed. So you're going to get a phone call from somebody. Nobody's going to ask you to do this. You're going to get a phone call and say, hey, we missed you on Thursday. I hope everything's okay. Right? One of the things that we've done in the church is we've really shied away from accountability lately. Or we try to make your accountability like very draconian, you know. but the truth is that that doesn't serve us. The churches that are growing today, most often, like almost like 80%, like more often than not, actually have a higher expectation of people, and set a higher expectation of people. And state that they have a higher expectation of people, and they do it because they think what they're doing is valuable, and they want you to be a part of it, and they want you to get out of it everything you can. You know, Church of the Resurrection, the biggest Methodist church going, is famous for saying right from the beginning, if you're going to become a member of this church, we expect you to be in church 3 Sundays a month, unless you're sick or ill, and if you're not here and you're traveling, we expect you to go to church somewhere. You know, actually, in their new sanctuary, because they know where creatures have it, they built that brand new giant sanctuary. Have you ever seen the pictures of this giant sanctuary they built? Well, they built it, but then they built it in where the seating's all in these little sections, because everyone always sits where you seat before, right? Every section has somebody whose job it is to notice who's there and who's not. So you say, well, how do you have a personal experience when you've got 3,000 people in a worship experience? Like, well, you don't have 3,000 people in a worship experience. You have 30 groups of 100. And each group of 100 has a person. Or several people whose job it is to know who's there and who isn't. So that's how you do that. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to take a minute, and I want you to, we get good discussion groups here. I want you to think about what the most valuable, what is the most valuable thing that you get out of being here? What's the most valuable group? What's the most valuable experience? Why is it important to you to be here? And so think about that for a minute, and I want you to talk around your tables and say, does that thing you're talking about fit in one of these categories? And if it does, what would it look like to talk about it, not in terms of, oh, my favorite Bible study, but talk about it in terms of my opportunity to experience community? And some of them would cost, like, a good Bible study, it should be a community, and they are. Like, let's be honest, I've been around a lot of long, long-standing Bible studies. And, oh, yeah, there's some Bible study happening, but it's secondary to, you know, the talking and fellowship before and after and the cake and the coffee. because that's the community part, right? And we love the community part. But it's also, a good Bible study better be an opportunity for some personal transformation. The Holy Spirit better be showing up, right? And doing some work on your spiritual life somewhere in there. You know, otherwise, I'm not sure what you're doing. So it may be that the experience you have is several of these. Does that make sense? So think about the most valuable experience for you, just personally. Like, what's the thing that gets your heart singing when you encounter it in this place? And which category of categories does it fit into? And then share that around your table a little bit. Okay? I'm going to give you Oh, we got tons of time. Look at this. Like 8 minutes to do that. I told you, type A engineer. We're in trouble.
It's a different way of explaining some things you might already know, but it's like, right.
My wife does have a cross or something like that, or there's this group of people, and they probably stand out. They're like 5:45 every morning.
They stay in those parties.
Somebody who's reached out to them, and they're all social events.
Kids section, you know, when they were too old to go to the nursery,
go to my day to stay home. Now that you're on the whole offer thing, we have been to the 10:30, but they got the children.
Because it's a whatever. And I know a lot of times,
you know, you hire somebody, you come in on Saturday and fix the work.
Except for maybe when I was in kids' Sunday school making paper mache whatever.
Right.
I saw water because if it started now, we'd be terrified.
2 minutes,
make
sure everyone's in the chair. Super excited to share from their table.
I'll volunteer Tony. She said give it.
Giving and receiving.
Giving and receiving. Okay.
I'll share. And I'm stealing Debbie's.
That's fine. You can share somebody else's. That's all right.
Talking about why aren't everyone here at the table, and we really hit on community. Everyone said that in some way, shape, or form. But at the end, she said, well, we're not touching all these other things. And the point is that we're not just here for community. We've got to go beyond that and touch these other things. But we were able to highlight some of the other ones. Creativity is a big piece for her. For me, accountability was one of them. But we're not hitting all these things. And we've got to be able to branch out and go beyond just, hey, we like the group of people we go to church with.
Right. So I'm curious. That's good. Does anyone have an example that's not community?
Sure.
Okay.
Personal transformation.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
I've been coming here for 2 years, and I can see that I'm not the same person I am when I walked in the door 2 years ago.
Amen. All right. Good. Others?
I think we had a conversation. I'm going to put a point to the accountability part, because
when we interact here at church, we the depth of our relationship is it's just so different than it is out in the work world or the social world or anything else. People come and go there, and yet we're here. We connect for a long term, and really we can expect our peers here to accept us, whether we're good or bad. We can expect them to forgive us. We can expect them to listen to us or treat us kindly, and they have the same expectation of us. It's a little deeper connection.
Dabar, yes, absolutely, good.
And I just wanted to say, because as I told my group, I grew up in a Catholic church, and then I went away from the church for decades. And what brought me back originally was creativity, because I came to church, and I loved the choir, and I decided to join the choir. And then from that, everything in my involvement blossomed.
Right. Where else in the world do you sing on a regular basis but in church? You know, we're big fans of, maybe in the car.
In shower.
But I mean, like, when you get that, my wife and I, we're big fans of America's Got Talent. You ever watch the show America's Got Talent? And, like, but nothing but these, like, 12-year-old singing people who are just amazing. Every single one of them will say, I sing in church. Right? Because where else do they get a chance, you know, to do that? All right, a couple others. We got two more.
61 years, my view of the church is from the pulpit. And I retired 3 times, and we selected this church, and I find myself seeing things in a different perspective, and I'm receiving. I used to give, and now I receive, hopefully still give, but that's personal transformation, and I think that's in so many different ways, all of us, but in worship primarily for me, and then I have to hear something in the preaching, which I heard this morning, and which I hear most every Sunday as I worship here, so, and that continues to recharge and transform my life, even as I said, if you're dyslexic, I'm just 48. So. But even at that age, I still need that personal input that broadens my horizons and changes. The person back there said I can look back and see the last 2 years changes in my life because of the receiving part of all of this in the personal transformation.
That's good. One more.
I don't know if it's accountability or transformation, but I'm a better person in the world because I rejuvenate on Sundays. And especially when I was associate dean, just overwhelmed with burdens, right? Mm-hmm. It gave that wellspring just to push through the resilience.
Nice.
And it's not as, you know, I don't have that same experience now or the toll, but I still remember those 10 years. Mm-hmm. It really mattered to have a rejuvenation.
So this is all wonderful. So there are wonderful things. This is, we should never sell ourselves short. There are amazing things happening. I have yet to go to a church where there isn't some, where the Holy Spirit isn't showing up and doing something interesting, right? The challenge that we have is we have these amazing life-changing opportunities where we are being made different and where we are being held accountable, where we are being rejuvenated and we are growing and everything. And then we use words like worship that the world doesn't understand what that word means to talk about it. Or, you know, we call it Bible study. Or we call it Sunday school. Sunday, you know, in my head, still, you say the word school, and I expect, you know, nice little neat rows of desks and a chalkboard up front. And sometimes we even use those images, like we get the clip art image, you know, of the whiteboard and all that kind of stuff, and we use that image. But I have not been in a church in the last 5 years and seen a bunch of kids sitting at desks. Right? Diligently working on worksheets. No, Sunday school today is often way more vibrant. It's interactive. It's very creative. We're trying to teach kids not just the Bible stories that we should teach them that. We're trying to teach them, you know, how to be good citizens. We're teaching them how to treat each other. We're helping them to grow up to be good, moral, ethical people who will contribute to life, right? Like, this is our goal in doing Sunday school, to do all of this, to help frame kids to be resilient, to stick up for one another, you know, to stand up to bullies. You know, I love teaching. I teach Sunday school at the church my wife and I go to every 6 weeks. I teach spiritual practices to 9-year-olds. Right? Like, that's just super fun, right? And so we do all this stuff, and then we call, and we put it on our sign, we put Sunday school. And I'm like, oh, gosh. We got permission to advertise our VBS. My church I was at, we had a really strong relationship with the school next door, and we got permission to advertise our VBS there so long as we didn't, you know, put Jesus on the flyer. Like, that was the goal. So what we did was we called it, we said, we're having VBS, Values, Belief, and Service. And then we unpacked what we meant by those words, you know, in the flyer, you know, to the community. So oftentimes for us, 80% of it, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are probably some things that need, every church has some things that need to change. Every church has some things they need to stop doing. Every church has some things they need to start doing. But so much of it is just recognizing truly what it is are we going to do, what it is are we doing, and how are we going to communicate that, the actual intention underneath it, right? There's this great video, it's a great TED Talk by a guy named Simon Sinek called Know Your Why. And basically he argues that the greatest companies in the world know, first and foremost, why they do what they do. And one of my favorite contemporary examples of this is actually Netflix. Is there who's a Netflix subscriber? Netflix, anybody not heard of Netflix? Let me just say it that way. Okay, so I mean, Netflix is a juggernaut of the entertainment industry right now that started out just mailing DVDs to people. Like, that's how it started. It started its life just mailing DVDs, and my wife and I signed up, and you can get a DVD in the mail. But eventually they figured out that DVDs were the past and streaming was the future, and then they realized that they didn't want to necessarily just rely on other people's content. They wanted to make their own, and now they're winning Emmy Awards and, you know, all kinds of stuff for this really great content they put out. And they keep changing and updating and rejuvenating what they do, which is really, really interesting. And you kind of wonder, how do they do this? Like, well, they do this because if you go to their website, and I think it's like netflix.com/job or something like that, you will find, they've had this from the very early days, the statement of what it is Netflix does. And Netflix's sole purpose is to connect people to entertainment. And they recognize that we have this deep, long-felt need in human history for entertainment. We've always craved and sought entertainment. So their goal is to connect people in the easiest way possible to the highest quality entertainment possible. So when it was DVDs were the way to get that done, they did DVDs. When DVDs didn't work, they went to streaming. When relying on other people didn't work, they started to make their own content, right? Because it all circles around the same thing, because they know they're not in the DVD business, they're not in the streaming business, they're not in the movie business, they're in the entertainment business. And they're going to keep doing whatever they have to do. The same is true for us. We're not in the worship business, guys. We're not. We're not in the getting people to come to worship business. We're in the getting people to come and experience community business, right? We're not in the Bible study business. I don't know that anyone is going to care how many scriptures you have memorized. They're going to care how many scriptures you're living out, right? So we're in the personal transformation and social transformation business. That's what we are in. So the more that we can recognize what we do in terms of categories that other people understand, you talk to somebody who's never been to church in their lives, they're going to know what these six things are, right? So developing that common understanding of what it is we do and how it connects to the needs people really have, because all of us have needs around these. Or, you know, my wife likes to say, human beings are pack animals, right? Like, we're like wolves. We don't do good on our own. Right? We need to be part of community.
Scott.
So, yeah.
What is a recommended language or ways to say Sunday school and worship without saying Sunday school?
Well, that's a really good question. A lot of our new church starts talk about, not about their worship time, but their community gathering time, So, also some of the things, especially like worship, there are some things that you know, you can talk about it in those terms. Just know you're going to have to do some education around, too. I mean, we're not going to get out of teaching people some language at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we also have to learn to translate. You know, Sunday school, you know, I would look at, you know, look at the way that, like, you know, daycare centers and Montessori's and, you know, all that kinds of stuff, too. They talk about childhood enrichment, right? They talk about, you know, things like that. So, you know, talking about it in that term would be, you know, would be far more useful if you're going to try to, you know, communicate to the world about it who doesn't know what Sunday school is. So that's a good question. I need to do a little more research on what other alternate naming people are actually using. So, and then the other thing is also understand that, that while people may be looking, people have a need for these things generically, you know, they're not, what's going to transcend, which is going to actually pique their interest is when they have, when one of these needs is connected with something concrete that they're interested in. So, you know, one of the things that that's been very successfully done a lot amongst a lot of youth groups is they'll basically offer like life skills training for youth. So, you know, they bring them into the church and they teach them how to cook. They teach them how to change the oil on the car. They teach them how to, you know, how to sew a button on. You know, all these sorts of things that we used to live at home that nobody knows, so we know we don't. And this is actually really critically important as more and more people are raised by single parents. Like, I was raised by a single mom from the time my father passed away when I was six. So I was raised by a single mom from six on. There was nobody in my house to teach me how to change the oil in my car because my mom didn't know how to do it. Right? So, you know, and there's a lot of single dads out there. There are more single dads out there than we know. You know, but especially those, you know, who are being raised by single parents, you know, if you've only, it doesn't matter. If you only got one parent, there's only so much you can do. You know, you're doing good to get dinner on the plate, let alone teaching them how to cook it. So, but we recognize that, you know, being, you know, building up your ability to be self-sufficient in those ways, that's about personal transformation. And so we want personal transformation for our young people. But you can't just walk up and say, hey, I'd like to help you be personally transformed. They're going to think you're weird. but you can say, you know, we're going to have an opportunity where we're going to teach life skills. And then while we're doing it, or we're going to talk about, you know, we're going to teach about bullies or how to prepare for college or, you know, things like that. There's a deep need for those sorts of things.
So when Boulder people are suspicious about any life skills that are done in a church.
Yeah.
And it's not just indifferent, there's a resistance.
Right. And here that's probably true. So you might not have, you might need to not be here. For, you know, just, I mean, what you're after is the relationships. You know, I mean, and what you want to do is build the relationships. Because that's, any system like this, and this probably needs to move on, is about building relationships. Because at the end of the day, that's why people aren't going to come. You go back to the story of my wife, that church, even though I was attending it, could have sent all the flyers to my house they wanted to. It wasn't until she had a personal relationship or some personal encounter with those folks, and she could walk into a room on Sunday morning and recognize faces, that she was comfortable, right? So what you're after here, what any church is after here, is relationships. I have a feeling I think we're all secretly hoping that there's some really clever, smart solution to our problems of evangelism and outreach. And the truth is, there aren't. We're waking up to this. The solutions to our problems around evangelism and outreach are actually fairly simple in concept, and then just take a lot of work to live out. And so this has been the biggest learning of our new Church Start world, where I work with these amazing church planners whose job it is to go and form relationships with people and start building teams of folks up to build this new community that they want to build. And just watching how much work that is for them to do. It's not hard. It's not conceptually difficult to understand what needs to be done. It's just work. I think that's the challenge for us to recognize is it's just what it takes. So one of the things is to kind of understand. So if the purpose of all this is, you know, churches will You know, churches will grow based on the strengths of the relationships that they have, right? And the stronger the relationships are between your church and the people in your community, the easier it is for your church to grow. And whether that's relationships through, like, school partnerships, you know, whatever, or individual one-on-one relationships, whatever it is, the lifeblood of growth for any faith community is the relationship between you and the community. And the stronger that is, the easier time you'll have. And the weaker it is, the harder it's going to be on you. So, but what we have to understand, so this is what, I'm just going to give you the 10-minute version or the 6-minute version of the training we give the new Church Start pastors and spend half a day on. But one is understand who's out there. So we talk about folks, and by the way, so this gets kind of hard for us because we don't like, you know, we don't like putting people in categories. We don't like putting people in boxes. And we don't like, none of us wants to think like we're suddenly selling Amway, you know, or anything like that. And I do appreciate that completely. But at the same time, we also have to recognize that you treat people differently. I treat my 12-year-old son differently than I treat my 7-year-old daughter, right? Because my son's 12, and he's getting to that age where he can be responsible for more things. And my daughter's still 7, right? Like, so, you know, I treat people that I've met twice, you know, at the grocery store different than I treat my best friend, right? Like, I don't unload the problems of the world on the person I've met twice at the grocery store, right? Like, I unload those on my best friend. So it's about that. It's about understanding that, that there are differences. So in what we talk about in New Church Start World is there's kind of these 5 categories, which is we talk about. One is what's called, we call prospects. These are folks that you know, people you've maybe encountered somewhere in the life of your church, someone's encountered these folks, and you are lucky enough to have some piece of contact information. You know their name, right? So many times that's the hardest thing, right? It's just getting people's names. But you've got their name, and you've either got their address, their email, their phone number, their something. You've got something on them. And then we talk about interested folks, which are folks that have been, that maybe you've encountered and they've attended something. Maybe they didn't come to, maybe they've been a worship visitor. Maybe they came to your trunk or treat or your food pantry or whatever it is that you do. But they've shown some interest in what you do. Participants. These are folks who show up fairly regularly, right? That, you know, who are actively doing something in the life of your church. And by the way, most people today, if they come to church once or twice a month, they think they're doing great. Right, like, they will say, that's my church, and I'm an active participant. I show up every first Sunday of the month. And, yeah, or whatever. So, people do that. Committed, that's probably most of all of you in the room right now. You're willing to come here and be part of this conversation. You're fairly committed to this church. You're fairly committed to this community. You want to see it grow. You want to see it prosper. And then your core, which are those folks who show up to everything, have served on every committee, and are totally sold out to what you're doing. So the thing when we talk about communication is, or when we talk about outreach, is that we need to recognize you're going to talk to these folks different than you talk to these folks. These folks know, you can use the word Sunday school. You can talk about, you know, hey, that's going to happen in the narthex. And they know what that means, right? They want to know when the administrative council's meeting, and when church conferences, and they know what that is. You know, they want to know that. These people don't care. Not only do they not care, they're going to get turned off by it. So it's amazing to me the number of churches I encounter that have, like, some kind of email blast. You guys do, like, a weekly email or anything like that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Does everybody get the same one? Yeah, see? And is the first thing listed at the administrative council meeting? Okay, well, you're doing better than most then. I don't know. I love to sign up for church's email blasts. If I can, I sign up for them. So I get all kinds of them all the time. It's amazing the number of them that are like, the first 3 lines are administrative councils this time, church conferences this time and there. And all the way back at the bottom is an announcement that says, oh, by the way, we fed 300 homeless families on Sunday. And I'm like, you buried the lead, man. I mean... So when we're dealing, you know, we're trying to communicate with folks and outreach to folks, we recognize that these folks are interested in those 6 themes we just talked about. And they want to know how you're doing connects with those 6 themes, right? They want to know how what you're doing is going to, you know, add value to their lives. That is their primary answer, and why they should fit what you're doing into their lives and patterns. Because the truth is, everybody's busy. No one's just hanging out on Sunday morning going, gosh, I got nothing to do. Right? Like, you know, they're doing stuff on Sunday morning already. And what you're trying to do is propose to swap it out for something else. Right? Well, you better be able to tell them why what you want to do is valuable and important. And it better actually be, by the way. Just saying, bait and switch will get you anywhere. So these folks, and these folks, yeah, they do want to know when the administrative council is, and they do want to know when hanging of the greens is, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's good, and it's important, and these folks are valuable. Our church runs on these folks. You all are these folks. You're great. We love you. but you've got a different set of needs, right? You want to be talked to differently, right, than these folks do. So you need to understand what you're doing. I would not advertise... you know, in the community, you know, your Sunday school as Sunday school. You would advertise it, and you wouldn't even advertise, I mean, what you'd advertise something very specific that you're doing in your Sunday school. So if you're going to talk about, the reality of bullying and why we don't do that and why we don't participate in that and why and what to do when we see it, right? Like, this is a real reality. I know, I've got two young kids. This is a big deal. And there's an opportunity for the church to speak to that, right? Well, you talk about that. You tell them that that's what you're doing, because that's what you care about. It also signals that you're a place in a community that cares about this, that says, hey, there are things happening in our schools right now, there are people being mistreated in our schools right now, and we want to have a voice in that. Or whatever it is, right? You know, if you want to talk about, you know, Bible study, I wouldn't talk about Bible study. I would talk about what the Bible study is doing. What topic are you taking on? What issue are you going to confront? How are people going to be grown and stretched and developed by being a part of it? You know, there are no end of very divisive topics in today's world, you know, to tear into. And one of the most crazy things at all would be, how do we be neighborly? How do we love one another when the world seems to want us to do nothing other than tear each other apart? How do we do that? I've been waiting for this. Like, I'm waiting for a time when I drive by a church and I see a giant sign outside that says Republicans and Democrats welcome. Like, I want to see, every election I went through in the pulpit, I would always tell people as the election got closer, I was like, please remember, in God's house, Republicans and Democrats are welcome, and you're probably sitting next to somebody you don't know. So that speaks to, you know, how do we strengthen our community in general, right? How our social transformation? How are we becoming a community that embraces its diversity of thinking, who embraces the diversity of who's present, right? Like, how do we lead on that? You know, and the thing is, you talk about it in those terms, and then when you do what you know how to do well, right? Because the thing we do know how to do well in the church is we know how to have book studies, right? Like, we know how to do that. We do that well, and actually, most of them are pretty good when we're brave and willing to actually talk about things and actually engage with one another. Like, we know how to do that well, but we're literally hiding our light under the bushel, as the song this morning said, you know, when we just say, oh, we're going to do a Bible study on this book, and you're supposed to fill in all those blanks, you got to fill those blanks in for me. You got to tell me what the book's about. You got to tell me why I should care. You got to tell me what's going to be different because I attend this. You got to tell me all that stuff. That's what these folks want to know, because that's what they're going to key into. So when we're communicating with those folks, that's how you want to do it.
Scott?
Yeah?
Intertwine into your last 6 minutes. The motive for doing evangelism, we need $73,000 more next year, and let's go out and get 20 new families and 20 new pledges.
That's a really...
Or we need more people so that our statistics to the conference look better. We preachers have a lot of ego, and I've done this, so I'm guilty as charged. But we do it because they become objects instead of people if we go for that purpose. So our motive, and they can smell... the wrong motive.
Oh, yeah.
Like fish 3 days out of water. So as we do all of this and reach people out there who are not in the church and don't understand, because we care about them,
yes,
about meaning in their lives and about serving them rather than manipulating them. And that's
absolutely,
I think that's a necessary understanding in order to do.
Oh, good. I'm glad you brought that up. That is absolutely true. One of my favorite ways to talk about this is, I, as someone who struggled with my weight my whole life, I know one thing's clear. You can't lose weight, right? Like, you just can't wake up one morning and have misplaced it, right? It just doesn't work that way, right? You can't lose weight. That's called amputation, right? That's just like cutting things off, all right? But you can be healthier by living a healthier lifestyle, right? By, you know, watching what you eat and getting more exercise and all that kind of stuff. The same is true for the church. We can't grow the church. That's called kidnapping, right? Like, you can't just go grab people off the street and get in there. Growth in the church comes as a byproduct,
right,
of living a healthy expression of faith and the life the way Christ did. And you're right. And the thing you have to understand is, we may love our churches, but Jesus did not say, go forth and build churches and build them abundantly. Right? Like, he didn't say that. Like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with our buildings, but supporting the building isn't the point, or supporting the pastor isn't the point, as lovely as we are. But it is a byproduct of living a healthy life and as a church. And the healthy life as a church has to be grounded in, first and foremost, and above anything else, love of God and love of neighbor. And if you're just looking at your neighbor as somebody you can get something out of, you're not loving them. But what we have to recognize is there's a lot of need in the world, there's a lot of hurt in the world, there's a lot of opportunity for us to speak into that, to speak love and grace and truth and health and healing and hope into a world that desperately needs it. And what we know is, when we do that and focus on that, the byproduct is people come in, they engage, they buy in, and oftentimes we'll get the growth we want. It's one of those things. I mean, Jesus wasn't kidding when he said, those who love their lives will lose it, but those who lose it for our sake will have life eternal. And I think, you know, those who love growing their churches aren't going to grow them. But those that give up growing their churches usually do. So when we're thinking about folks, so one of the things that we do is we actually provide to all of our new church starts a church management system called Breeze. And one of the things that Breeze does is it helps you keep track of keep track of folks, and you keep track of your membership and your records and all the things we do today. But it also has a really wonderful integrated communications platform where you can send emails and text messages and all kinds of stuff. And so they will actually keep track of folks and kind of list them in these categories. Now, I would say, at a minimum, churches need at least, if you don't want to go through the machinations of figuring out who belongs in all five categories, you need at least two. You need something for these folks who you've encountered outside of the church, who you're lucky enough to have maybe some contact information for, and all that kind of stuff, and a means of communicating with them, however you're going to do it, on a regular basis. Things that are not council meetings, but instead things that are related to those six themes. You know, so that you say, we're going to have an opportunity for you to come and talk and be part of building bridges in our community across political divisions. And what you're actually going to do is you're going to have a Bible study. You're going to go find a book about it that you really like. You're going to have a book study about it because you know how to do that. But that's not what you're going to tell these folks you're going to be doing, which is what you're actually doing, because you're going to build bridges across political divisions in your community, because that's what you need to do. Because that's the why. That's why you're doing it. The what you're doing is having a book study because you know how to do it. But that's the why. Tell them why you're doing what you're doing, right? So there are a million different tools. I got a boogie here. I highly suggest that churches create some sort of group of people whose job it is to learn new people's names. If it's everybody's job, it's nobody's job. True, pure simple fact. So it might be names during worship experience, it might be names at other events. Come up with a way you're going to follow up with folks. you know, and set goals. So again, in New Church Start Land, one of the things I do every quarter, my New Church Start pastors send me reports about how they're doing. One of the things that we ask every quarter is how many folks have you added to your contact list, which basically means how many folks have you put in this list of folks. It is not acceptable to say less than 50. So, and actually 50 is a little light for a new church start. Maybe once they've been going for a while, 50 a quarter is not that light. But that's 200 names a year. That's really not, when you're first starting, like the first 6 months you're doing it, it's 50 a week. That's the goal. You know, and not everybody reaches that. I'll give you that much. But have somebody do that. We also have any of you seen Mission Insight? The tool? Okay, so who are my, like, engineer-y type A map people? Okay, Mission Insight.
Oh, very good, man.
yes. Mission Insight is a tool that we bought, that Conference pays for and provides to all of our churches at not insignificant cost, so you should take advantage. And it will basically tell you anything and everything you want to know about your neighborhood and who's in it. So I looked up your report when I came in. I did a report. I pulled a report for you all. Within 10 miles drive of your building, you're not going to be surprised to learn this. The two dominant groups are baby boomers, well-off, fairly well-off baby boomers, and students and young single people. You know, by far. Like, those are your two, that's 60% of your population right there. So Mission Insight has a way of helping you understand who those people are. It breaks them down into 54 different categories, the political campaigns that everybody uses. It's basically, this is the big data that every Fortune 500 uses, is available to you all. Including this new feature right here. That's why I said Mission Insight. It's kind of scary. So what I asked Mission Insight to do was tell me all of the all the households in my neighborhood where there are children present in the home. And then it brought up a Google map and put little blue dots on top of every house that has children in the home. And there's 1,000 different ways you can parse this. You can say, give me where the head of household is over age 65, where whatever. It'll tell you all those sorts of deals. And you're like, well, how does it know? I'm like, well, it knows, because here we go. This is me. So when you hover over the little dot, then it will pull up the record. I told it nothing.
Of course not.
This is what they know about us, FYI. So I put a little dot over my house because it knows I have children. It knows my name. It knows my wife's name. It knows my address. It knows that I'm married. It knows that I have children. It knows I have more than some college. Thank you very much. I have a master's degree. I am 40 years old. I do own my home. This is my mosaic group in, you know, English, and it makes it, and it also can make a pretty good guess at my income. So, I know, you're all like, that's really scary. And I'm like, it is. But it also exists, and it's not going anywhere, so we might as well take advantage. So one of the things that you can do through Mission, and then I can basically plot this out, and then I can ask Mission Insight, and I can buy this mailing list from Mission Insight. It's only the people I want. So if you want to know, give me everyone 55 and older who has moved into the community in the last 6 months. You can ask Mission Insight that question, and it will give you back a list of folks. And if you want the mailing list, you're going to pay like 10 cents a name. The system's free, and you can use it in spite of that. If you want the actual mailing list you can use, you're going to pay 10 cents a name, which is not very expensive. And what could you do if you knew that? So what do you know? If somebody's 55 and older, they're probably at or near, they're nearing retirement, they've just moved to the community, they're probably looking for what? A community. Yeah. Right? You know, we don't know a lot about them, but now you know something about them. Or you can say, give me everybody who has moved into the community in the last 6 months, who has, you know, school-age children present in the home. How would you talk to those folks? What would you say to them? Again, they're probably looking for community. They're also probably concerned about their kids and how their kids are adjusting into the new school system, all that kind of stuff. Or just everybody in general. Like, if you're going to do life skills, So you can say, give me a list of everybody who has kids in the home who are 12 and over. And you can tell those folks, hey, we're doing this thing where we're going to teach kids to cook. We're going to teach kids how to change oil. We're going to teach kids to do all this kind of stuff. And, oh, by the way, we're going to, help them be better citizens and talk about, whatever we're going to talk about, right? So this tool is available. So what I'm going to need, though, is I have some cards here, is you can sign up right now. I can, if somebody's interested, I can tell you how to do that. And then let me know. This feature is called Neighbor Center, and I have to turn it on. You don't get it by default. I have to turn it on for one of your accounts. But I checked your church, and the only person who has a church account at your church right now is, I think, your associate pastor. So whose name I'm suddenly forgetting?
Sarah.
Yes, Sarah does have an account. But this is available to you. We also have did I put it on there? Okay. So if you go to mountainskyumc.org/vitalcongregations, there's sign up. There's instructions for how to sign up for Mission Insight. We also have available through Whole Church Initiative, and I forgot to bring some with me, these little booklets that walk you through two things. They walk you through how to use Mission Insight and what it's just trying to tell you about your community and your church. There's also this really cool thing you can do in Mission Insight where you can pull up the demographics for the community, and then if you give it an address list, just an address, you don't need names, just addresses. If you give it the address list, because it already knows the names, if you give it the address list of who's in your church, it will then compare the two. And it will help you understand where you are similar to your community and where you're the kind of how your community lines up with the community in your neighborhood. It's really cool. So there's a 6-chapter booklet thing we put out called Know Your Neighbor, that you can find here too, called Know Your Neighbor, that walks through that. The biggest thing you can do, and I know you're on this whole 1-year plan thing, which I think is great. Oh gosh, we're in that time. The biggest thing you can do is to create a group of people that will start working to build an intentional relationship system in your church. About how are you gonna, and really look at how we're gonna build relationships with our community outside of us. How are we gonna strengthen those relationships? And once we have those relationships, how are we going to nurture those relationships as they move forward? One of the best ways to do that would be to put a team together to get the Know Your Neighbor booklet, which will take you about 5-6 sessions to get through. Learn about your church, learn about your community, and then kind of reflect on those themes and say, okay, where's all this pointing us? Because the challenge is most of us have a lot. It feels like there's a lot to do, but you got to go back to the whole how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So you got to decide where you're going to start. In the tail, you're going to start with trunk. Pick a starting place. Pick somewhere, get going. And what I've discovered when churches have done this, this is really interesting and oftentimes life-giving work, right? I mean, done well, this is not serving on a committee. I mean, sometimes committees are life-giving, but sometimes. But it is, and it's energizing, and it's exciting, and it's exciting to reflect on, because one of the things you have to do is you have to reflect on, where's God already working in your church? Where is the Holy Spirit already moving? Where are our lives already being transformed? Where do we see evidence of God's kingdom bursting out in just a little bit of a new way into it? And then we say, how do we invite people into that? How do we make that even better? How do we make that even stronger? How do we make sure more people have the opportunity to have to experience the things that you all have experienced? Too often in the churches, we spend too much time thinking about things we don't do well or the things we're not doing. And we need to spend a lot less time worrying about that and a lot more time worrying about where is God already at work and how is God calling you to make that work bigger and better and invite more people into it, right? Because we don't have to be everything to all people. We can't be everything to all people. We shouldn't even try to be everything to all people. You can only be Mountain View United Methodist Church. You need to be. And you need to figure out where God's calling you next. So I just threw a lot of stuff at you. I appreciate that. There, somewhere in the institution of your church, they do have a copy of my slides. So you should be able to get a copy of those with all the URLs on them, but really would encourage you to figure out, put a group of people together and figure out who's going to take that next step. So, thank you.
Thank you.
And I have cards. I have cards here if anybody wants to take one. They've got my cell phone and my email on it. If you want to contact me.
First, on behalf of Radical Half Town Church Council and everybody here, I'm so impressed that you all made it to be with us. It's nice to have the nomenclature to our committed group. Before you leave, if you'd like to be part of this initiative, and it's not grown members, we just thought that would grab your attention. So actually,